Good afternoon and welcome to the Thursday, March 17th, 2022 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. If you could please join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call of members.
Rich John.
Here.
Dan Klein is asked to be excused. Ann Corman.
Present.
Mike Lane.
Here.
Greg Mezzi.
Here.
Veronica Piller.
Here.
Lee Shurtleff.
Here.
Mike Sigler.
Here.
Travis Brooks will be arriving later this evening. Randy Brown.
Here.
Amanda Champion.
Here.
Deborah Dawson.
Here.
Henry Grandison.
Present.
Shauna Black.
Here.
We have 12 members present.
Thank you. We do not have any presentations or proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices this evening. We will be having an executive session after our meeting for two and possible three things. First is a financial matter of a particular person. The second is contract negotiations, and there could be an ask for the appointment of a particular person. Now for privilege of the floor. Let's start with Mr. Bob Lynch.
Good evening. Robert Lynch, 175 Gray Road, Town of Enfield, member of the Enfield Town Board, but I'm here tonight on behalf of another group that I'm a member of, the Advisory Board on an Indigent Representation, ABIR, and it's good to be back home tonight. Those of you who are attorneys or those who just study criminal law, take an avid interest in it, remember a case called Gideon v. Wainwright. It was a 1963 Supreme Court case, and it guaranteed anyone charged with a felony that he or she would be entitled to legal representation. Another Supreme Court case later expanded that to misdemeanors. I'm here in behalf of the ABIR to advocate in favor of Resolution 10789 that's on your agenda tonight that would urge the state to amend Section 18B of the county law to increase the compensation rates for attorneys who represent indigent clients in criminal matters. I think it's important. It cleared committee, the Public Safety Committee, earlier this afternoon. I'm glad they voted affirmatively, and I hope you will tonight as well. Rushed representation, ineffective representation, or do it on the cheap representation is really no representation at all. And it really is a defiance of the rules the Supreme Court set in Gideon v. Wainwright. And I think the rates right now that the state has mandated for assigned counsel attorneys are woefully low. $60 an hour for misdemeanors, $75 an hour for felonies. Now, how many attorneys work for that amount of money right now? So you know what you're going to get. You may get rushed representation. Fortunately, Lance Salisbury, who heads the assigned counsel program, makes sure that's not the case right now. But he told the committee this afternoon he is worried. He is worried. He said, we're losing our experienced attorneys. It's critical. Increased assigned counsel fees are desperately needed to maintain quality representation. We on the ABIR board in January voted in favor of this resolution, which is supported by a number of statewide assigned counsel groups, public defenders, and the like. It's before the state legislature. I hope it passes. And I think that your vote tonight in support of such an increase in assigned counsel fees, as recommended by the ABIR in January and again reaffirmed just a couple of weeks ago, will help in that direction. I hope you'll give it serious consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Next is Mr. Zachary Wynn.
Zachary has not joined the Zoom meeting at this time.
Okay, thank you. If we see Zachary towards the beginning of our meeting, we will let him have public public comment of 3 minutes. Next, let's move to municipal officers. Public comment. Privilege of the floor. It appears that we have no one here. We are moving right along. Let's have legislators. Privilege of the floor. Lee Shurtleff.
If you'll indulge me.
Absolutely.
I'm going to put on just a slightly different hat as Village of Groton historian. And out in my district today, this is considered a holy day. And that has to do with the very large Irish population that is in the Groton community and has been since 1870. And what brought the Irish to Groton, large droves of them, if you will, was when they opened up the valley to the railroad. South Central Railroad became a part of the Lehigh Valley Railroad. A spur was put up the lake in order to carry coal from the fields of Pennsylvania to the Great Lakes. And the Irish were a large part of the building of the railroad. And immigrants at that point in time were considered expendable. They didn't use slave labor, they used immigrants. And those who came experienced discrimination in housing, in economics, in jobs, and the social life, what have you. But they still came. And large families settled there because of the manufacturing that was going on in Groton and the agriculture. And they built carriages and bridges and road rollers and steam engines and eventually typewriters. When the typewriter factories first opened, the Irish couldn't be hired there. After World War I, as the demand increased, they were hired. And many generations have since lived in our community, continue to live there, and have been woven into the fabric of our community and continue to contribute today. And it's an ugly history that, like other histories we have, is hard to reconcile. But I just wanted to mention it on this day that it's a large part of the district that I represent in a large heritage. And when I get back to the community tonight, I will probably raise a pint of Guinness and maybe a shot of Jameson. Unless you think I'm culturally appropriating, my great-grandfather came from Ireland and was a teamster on the Erie Canal. And I won't tell you what he did during Prohibition, but he won't object to the Jameson part. But I do wish to honor the heritage that the Irish brought to our Groton community and made us thrive through their labors over the years. And we appreciate their contributions. Thank you.
Thank you, Lee. That's a very nice history lesson for us. Typically, we've left the history lessons up to Mike Lane.
He's my mentor.
But I'm sure that he'll share the duties with you. Next, we have Amanda Champion.
Thank you. I just wanted to say a couple things. Many of us just got back yesterday from the NYSAC conference, the New York State Association of Counties, and full of information, workshops, sessions, panel discussions, food from the Desmond Hotel. I just was going to report back on one of the things I attended, which was about cybersecurity. And you all have gotten in your email, and those of you who attended the conference got the Cybersecurity Primer for County Leaders, which was published just a month ago. So here it is in hard copy. We are requesting that everyone here read that. It was put together by a working group, including Lauren Cottrell from our IT department. And the presentation was sort of the process of how they put this together, the focus groups they had, the discussions, and trying to narrow down a whole lot of information into something that was digestible by people like us. So, you know, I think one of the things I walked away with was that we all might think, oh, that's, you know, we leave that up to the IT guys and men and women, and it's not really, doesn't matter to me. I just use my computer, or, you know, staff in DSS or at the airport may not, you know, think that that matters to them. But it really does, because those of us who use county equipment, county computers, are very vulnerable to being scammed, being attacked. If you use a county computer, you need to read this document. So please take the time to do that. The other thing that we as a county need to do, and I ran into Greg Potter this morning, actually, and he said we do have an exercise planned for June where I'm not sure who it will be that will come in, but in some cases it's been the Department of Homeland Security, will come in and run through an exercise with some of the department heads, some legislators, folks who would need to know this information, and act as if we have a situation happening, and then we will need to respond. It's, you know, half a day. Some of us might be asked to participate, and it will really help point out what our weaknesses are, and then we can go about fixing them. So that's going to be really interesting. So that was one thing I went to. I also just wanted to mention the final event of the week, the half week, was a presentation about childcare, partly by our own Amy Hendricks. And I think it was actually the presentation I got the most out of. The speakers were very dynamic. They had data. They had lots of information about the very dire situation that we are currently having with childcare in the state, in this county, and across the country. A lot of details. I'm not going to go into it, but I really appreciated the dynamic speakers and the information that I got there. And then the last thing I'll say is, you know, sometimes I leave NYSAC and I'm not really sure what to do with the information that I got, but I will say that I had a really great time with some of my colleagues and got to know some of my new colleagues better, and I just really appreciated that chance to spend a couple days together and share meals and have some laughs. And I think for me, that's honestly one of the most important parts of going to NYSAC. So I appreciate the chance to go. Thank you.
Thank you, Amanda. Mike Lane.
Yeah, I wasn't going to start with this, but I will. It's okay to say it's St. Patrick's Day. And I know a little bit about Groton. My dad, who was all Irish, graduated from Groton High School. My parents worked at and made typewriters at Smith Corona over there. So Groton is a wonderful community. But what I wanted to start out with tonight is I still want to talk some more about Ukraine. And with your permission, Madam Chair, I'd really like to ask if we could have a moment of silence for the women, the children, the men, the soldiers who are dying in Ukraine, and even for the Russian soldiers who are there as conscripts and probably not totally happy with what they're having to do. Peace can be negotiated. Speaking of the Irish, look at the fact that the peace has been holding in Northern Ireland and Ireland for a number of years now, and that's a good thing. If we could have a moment of silence, I would appreciate it. Thank you for that. I'm very proud that we now have the Ukrainian flag flying in the front of the chambers, thanks to all the efforts of administration and our legislature and everyone in the chair to have a flag up there proudly flying next to the flag of our United States of America. We're all frustrated with what's going on over there. We're proud of the people in Ukraine defending democracy. I hope everyone got a chance to hear President Zelensky's speech to Congress yesterday. It wasn't long. Part of it, he showed a very disturbing video about some of the things that were happening to his communities over there and his people. There's no simple answer. There are ideas out going ahead, say, hey, let's have a no-fly zone. Let's cut off all the natural gas. Let's and oil. Let's do this or that. But we all know that holding together an alliance is not easy, particularly when each country has its own vital interests. We know that having a nuclear power on the other side is not easy to negotiate with. Mr. Putin has been almost a megalomaniac in this. And we had an ex-president call him a genius. It doesn't take genius to kill women and children and soldiers. It takes genius to keep them alive. And we have to continue the way we're going and ratchet down these sanctions the best we can. We know that's what happened when the Soviet Union collapsed. It was because of their economy. Their economy is dependent on the rest of the world, just like all of our economies. And we have to pray that the sanctions will help people see differently. It doesn't help when our former president embraces Mr. Putin. And I certainly hope that all of our congressional candidates from whatever party, those that are aspiring to be in Congress, will condemn it in no uncertain terms. There's a phrase, and I wish I could say it in Ukrainian, to say that we support Ukraine, and Ukraine will go on in its democracy. But to Ukrainian people here locally, we stand with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Randy Brown.
Thank you. Happy St. Patrick's Day. My grandfather was also 100% Irish, and he came here through the WPA from coal mines down in Pennsylvania is where he came from, and started McGuire Gardens. People have been here a long time. That was my grandparents that owned that. And all the kids and grandkids worked there at one time or another. So hardworking man. If he was alive today, he'd be in the pub. I don't mean to rain on people's parade, but in our area here and people I speak to, they're struggling financially. There are a lot of people still out of work. Kid daycare is a big issue for a lot of people. And I know we have the American Rescue Funds that we're discussing. I would like to see us move quicker on that. I don't see why we couldn't take the $10,000 to $25,000 buckets and get them out there to people. We can manage it. We can handle it. We handle COVID. We can handle that. So we need to start helping people. So.
Thank you, Randy. And just to let everyone know, Lisa will be updating us this evening, this afternoon on that. Any other questions or comments from legislators on privilege of the floor? Yeah, Veronica.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two separate things. One, I just want to also echo some of what Amanda said about the NYSAC conference. I really appreciated going there, especially as a first-time legislator, getting to know I got to meet some of the staff members here that I hadn't managed to meet in Ithaca. Maybe a little silly that it was in Albany, but that was much appreciated. And it was really good, like, from my personal perspective, to kind of put our work here, as much as it's really important how it ties to the specifics of our local community in Tompkins County, to put it in a broader context with how things are the same and different as in other counties, how this interacts with the state. In addition to the excellent child care workshop, Amy killed it with her presentation that Amanda mentioned, I went to a few others. One was about how the state budget impacts counties. I learned that a strong piece of glue that holds the counties together is we wish the state would pay for more things. I went to one about the houselessness crisis, and it was just good to hear a bunch of different, like, ideas and examples of how struggles are the same and different across the states, different things that people have been doing. I went to one about broadband and new state funding that'll be available for that. Got to hear about some projects and counties that are way further along than we are, and I'm excited to get some momentum on this locally. I went to one about different ways to manage the opiate crisis. If I can do some show and tell, there were a lot of presenters. One of them gave us all these little overdose response kits. She said they got them as cheap as possible. It took $3.50 to make this. Inside is some Narcan. She gave us the shortest, most energetic Narcan training ever, I assume. 2 minutes, and she's like, we're all trained, but it was pretty simple, as well as some other, like, food, water, chapstick, gloves, like sanitizing wipes. And I don't know if we have this in our community. Someone can tell me, but, you know, hey, that's a nice take-home tangible idea. And I do and don't hope that I'll get a chance to use that at some point. So really grateful for that opportunity. Second thing, unrelated, March 31st is between now and our next legislative meeting, and it's the Transgender Day of Visibility. And across the country, we've been seeing recently a lot of really attacks on the rights of transgender youth in particular, but trans people of all ages, with the, like, restrictions on medical care for trans folks in Texas. We've seen some awful bills, like, along the same lines in Alabama, Arkansas. People have been talking about the Don't Say Gay bill in Florida. And in Tompkins County is not in any of those places, and New York is doing pretty well, but it's really scary. So I just wanted to take a moment to affirm what is true about transness and gender in general and in Tompkins County. It's in our county code that it is unlawful to discriminate in many, if not all, contexts on the basis of gender identity, gender expression. I don't have it in front of me, but a long list of, ways that people express their gender, perceive their gender, ways that other people perceive your gender. That's been codified here since 2004. So know that if you are experiencing gender or, like, trans discrimination, that is illegal. We're behind you on that. Also, just want to remind everyone, whatever gender anyone says they are, that is the gender that they are. Whatever pronouns someone says they have, those are the pronouns that they have. And, you know, trans folks, trans kids, especially out there, I see you, I love you, we support you. Everyone else, see them, love them, support them. Support us. I don't have the same story, but as a non-binary person, it's been really helpful to have, like, the community and support here in, in my community in this county to feel just, like, a little more comfortable in my skin, in my pronouns, things like that. And I just want to remind everyone to extend that kind of support to anyone you interact with, so that New York State and Tompkins County in particular can keep being and be an even stronger place of security for trans folks. Thanks.
Thank you, Veronica. Deb Dawson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. It's interesting listening to all these comments, and the common thread in all of this you know, your Italian forebears were discriminated, or your Irish forebears were discriminated against. My Italian grandparents came from Sicily and were similarly discriminated against. Trans people are discriminated against. Unfortunately, while I was at NISAC, I watched the news on TV, which is not something I do at home, and I hear stories about homeless people being shot randomly on the streets of New York and Washington, D.C., a Chinese woman getting kicked near to death just for being Chinese. I mean, this woman was almost my age. Who would kick a little old lady? Seriously, what the heck is wrong with people? I don't understand why it's so easy to pin a label on somebody who's a little bit not like you and use that as an excuse to be indecent and inhumane. I don't know that there's anything we can do to solve that problem other than to set an example. So far this year, it's been very refreshing to see how this legislature has functioned in a very collegial and cordial way. I hope we can continue that. And I hope that maybe someone who watches will say, yeah, we can disagree without being disagreeable, and we can set aside our differences in the interests of making it better for everyone. So thanks for letting me rant. And happy St. Patty's Day.
Thank you, Deb. Ann Corman?
Thank you, Chair. Black, I just wanted to say quickly in response to what some people were just saying that as far as discrimination, how I see it and the research that I've done is people have been lied to, people have been tricked into thinking that if other people have rights, that they have less rights, less stuff, less money, less land. I mean, this is the story that's been told for thousands of years, and it's been told a lot more in the last few years, and it's wrong. So that's just something that people can try and, you know, when you talk to other people, it's just a total fallacy. We are stronger together. We have more together. We have a better world together. So it does not diminish us. It actually enriches all of us to open up everything, whether it's food, our land, our money, our housing, to every single right to everybody. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. Anyone else for legislator privilege of the floor? Henry Granison and then Rich John.
Yes, I wasn't going to speak, but I'm actually in Manhattan right now. I'm a block away from Fifth Avenue. And today, I was at the St. Patrick's Day Parade. And I got to see lots of diversity, lots of fun, lots of celebrations. And so I wish everybody a happy St. Patrick's Day. And I may have some green beer later on tonight.
Good job, Henry. Thank you for representing Tompkins County out there.
Yeah. Good night. Goodbye.
Bye. Rich John?
Thank you. Just to add to the comments, I'm actually three-quarters Irish, and I've been very fortunate in being able to visit Ireland and meet some of my distant relatives from over there. My mother's mother in particular came over here on a boat very, very close in time to when the Titanic came over, and fortunately she wasn't on that one. But it was a very hard, hard experience in Ireland when she left, and it was not easy when she got here. It was a real struggle in New York City and on the Jersey coast, and she made it. Later in her life, she was asked, would she like to go back to Ireland? And she said, why in the world would I ever go back there? You know, we romanticize Ireland, and it is just gorgeous. I advise everybody to go back and visit. It's a wonderful country, but her experience, it was awful. Coming to this country and getting to live in America was a glorious thing for her. So she was certainly discriminated against. She struggled, but she appreciated where she was able to be tremendously. And it's great to be able to talk about her a little bit. So thanks.
Thanks, Rich. Deborah Dawson?
I appreciate hearing about that, Rich. I wasn't planning on speaking tonight either, but here I am speaking twice. But I think that it bears remembering how hard it was for our grandparents, our parents, whoever made the trip over. I know my grandfather had to come many months before my grandmother did, because he had a brother who had come over with his wife, and he died, and my grandfather had to come over and take care of his brother's family. And my grandmother was left back in Palermo with four little kids. And my aunt used to tell me how every day my grandmother walked down to the shipping dock to see if the tickets had come for her and my aunts and uncles. And then when they got to Ellis Island, one of my aunts had an eye infection. So they were quarantined on Ellis Island. I mean, can you imagine? We need to remember this stuff. We need to remember how hard it was for these people to immigrate. And we need to remember that that's where we all started. When we start, you know, vilifying immigrants from wherever they come, because this is still a promised land.
Thank you, Deborah. Anyone else for legislator privilege of the floor?
Zach has joined us now, if you wanted to go back to
okay.
that.
Yeah, I want to thank the legislators that spoke tonight. It's nice to hear your stories and your history, and thank you for sharing that. Now we have for public comment, Zach Wynn. Zach, you know the rules, and you have 3 minutes.
Good evening. Can you hear me?
Sure can.
Thank you. Recently, there was a statement put out by the legislature regarding Ukraine, and I was hoping that the legislature could consider making a similar statement in solidarity with the Uyghurs in Xinjiang, in China. There was a recent talk given at Cornell where a Uyghur scholar was taunted and berated by Chinese students who walked out of her presentation. And the university made it a point to express, you know, the approval, essentially, of their walkout. And with the situation in Ukraine continuing to worsen, and China aligning themselves with Russia and becoming more aggressive towards Taiwan, I was thinking it would be a good move to make it clear that the legislature and the people of Tompkins County stand in solidarity with the Uyghurs in Xinjiang. This town essentially runs on Chinese money. A vast proportion of the students at Cornell are Chinese citizens. And Cornell University can't make a strong statement in support of the Uyghurs without financially annihilating themselves. So if and when an invasion of Taiwan does occur, I would hope that the legislature would make a similar statement condemning that action. And once again, I ask all of you to please consider speaking out on behalf of the Uyghurs and the genocide that is occurring there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jack. I meant Zach, not Jack. Okay, next is the chair's report, and I have a pretty short report this evening. Just to mention that as a legislature, we will continue to acknowledge the loss of life and the murdering of children and citizens in Ukraine. Each day of attacks and bombs on innocent civilians continues to build a case for needed intervention and support. We will continue to hold our Ukrainian residents and their families in our thoughts and prayers. This week, as many of our colleagues have mentioned, nine of us went to NYSAC in Albany and attended meetings. I went to the Opens Meeting Law, the Emergency Operations, and I also moderated a seminar on county COVID response. I also attended the Public Health and Mental Health Committees for NYSAC, and we passed two resolutions. A few weeks ago, many of us legislators participated in an active shooter training here in the chambers, and it was provided by our very own Sheriff's Department and Lieutenant Jeremy Zingenfuss. I would just like to send a shout out to him and thank him for coming here and teaching us what we would need to do if there was an incident of an active shooting. As all of you know, we have wrapped up our county administrator interviews last week. I want to thank all of you that were part of the process. Also, thank you to the department heads for your feedback, and I look forward to the vote this evening. Next, we have special topical presentations and discussions. We do not have one this meeting. However, please mark your calendars for next meeting. I know that as a legislator, many of us have received phone calls and text messages and emails about assessments. Many of them have gone out. There are still, my understanding, about 500 that will be going out next week. And people are upset about the increase that they've seen this year. So Jay is going to come here and explain the rationale, as well as to talk a little bit about the grievance process if people are interested and not happy with their assessments. Next, let's move on to reports by the County Administrator, Lisa Holmes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have three items, or two items, and then a brief COVID report. First, like many of you have mentioned, I too attended the NYSAC conference together with Amy Hendricks in our office. She did a great presentation and several legislators, and I too found it very valuable. I wanted to just speak briefly the information that I gleaned on the outlook for counties in the New York State budget and how that will affect us moving forward. So as you may know, New York is in good shape financially with a sizable surplus. And although the geopolitical situation adds uncertainty in several areas, the governor's budget on the whole looks good for counties. There is support for local health departments. There is the end of the sales tax diversion for AIM, the aid to municipalities, which in 2021 for Tompkins County totaled about $387,000. However, the governor's budget continues to divert local taxes toward the state's distressed hospital fund. The One House budgets from the legislature either reduce or eliminate this and see it as New York State's responsibility. But to give you an order of the magnitude, in 2021, that amounted, we paid about $564,000 in Tompkins County, or that was diverted. That was our local sales tax revenue that was diverted to the state's distressed hospital fund. And we also learned that none of that across the state went to distressed hospitals, but it went to the state's general fund. So as Veronica said, we are united as counties about these keeping local taxes local. Many more details were shared about the state budget, and we'll be taking those into consideration as we make preparations for April's budget retreat. So that was that item. Also, just wanted to provide a brief update on our local recovery grant fund program. After the legislature last convened with the expanded budget committee meeting to clarify some of the points of the program, we summarized those points and got them out to the RFP respondents. and allowed them time to resubmit their proposals back to us. We received three revised proposals, and last week staff from administration and finance met to review and score those proposals. We have scheduled brief meetings with those three respondents next week via Zoom with the goal to bring forth a recommendation for the legislature to consider shortly thereafter. So that's the update of where that is. I'd be happy to answer questions on any of that before we move to a COVID report.
Any questions for Lisa? I don't see any hands. Thank you.
Okay. And then for the COVID report, I believe we have Amy Hendricks and Frank Krupa with us.
Hi, everyone.
Hi.
Well, first, thank you all for all the compliments about child care. I am happy to provide that information to everyone but Greg. I told him he couldn't have my PowerPoint. So, Legislator Mezzi, if you guys choose to share with him, you can. But it was a great conference and a great opportunity to network with our colleagues. With that being said, we're going to dive into our COVID report. And probably to your dismay, we talked about it earlier today, and we are not going to be providing regular ongoing COVID reports. We're going to be providing more of these potentially through Health and Human Services and as things arise. It has been 2 years. We declared that state of emergency on March 13th, 2020. So it's been over 2 years since we have been doing this COVID thing that Frank Krupa caused. And because of that, we're going to bring it to an end. So I'm going to give you some updates today, and then just know it's your last chance to really grill Frank Krupa before, you know, we turn into other things that he's got going on. So I am happy to report that since we last met, our numbers have decreased. We currently only have one hospitalization, and we have not lost any more community members since our last meeting. It feels really good to say that because that has not been the case for quite a while. We also have had some positive cases reported and are continuing to track the vaccine doses. You can find that still on the Health Department website. Since we last met, the governor announced the end of the mask mandate in schools, and that started on March 2nd. That led to a lot of discussion and at this point, the schools have moved forward with that and seem to be doing all right. Just last night, as you know, your executive orders were extended through April 15th. There was debate if they would be extended. They've been extended one more time. They could be extended again. That allows for remote meetings and some other things within that executive order, but we don't know if they will be. Other things that have happened: Cornell University also lifted their mask mandates for most on-campus settings, and we continue to distribute many, many masks, COVID KN95 masks and youth masks to our community, and there are ways that you can continue to request them. We've also distributed all the test kits that we have received from New York State. We have not received any additional test kits at this time, nor has it been indicated that we'll be receiving any more. If we do, we'll get them out into the community. They are readily available, though, in pharmacies and stores and other places. We are continuing to do some clinics, and Frank can talk a little bit about this. We're continuing to use our request to clinic form for some booster clinics, and have continued to do that. The other piece that Frank will talk more about is we have started to really shift our language to talk about what moving forward really looks like. We've learned a lot these past 2 years. I think as individuals, as the community, and as an organization, and we're going to be building on what we've learned as we shift our focus and our energy. And one of those main areas is our mental health and public health merger. And of course, that's where you'll be hearing more from Frank. So Frank, I'll turn it to you if you have any other updates, or then we can open it up to the legislators to really grill you this time.
Sure. Thanks, Amy. Just to put a point on, Amy mentioned that things are ending. Our reporting is ending. COVID isn't, unfortunately. It is still part of us and part of our community. But things are going as well as I think we could hope for them at this point. We're still monitoring disease in the community. We're still looking at variants and how those might evolve. And, you know, obviously if things change, we'll bring our recommendations and actions, you know, forward to the community. But as we are shifting now from response to recovery, there's a lot of work to be done still as that occurs. And I was able to put out an op-ed with the help of our public information team in the last few days that really kind of got to the heart of, you know, remembering what we've been through for the last 2 years, but recognizing that we now know what we're capable of. And wanting to be able to carry that momentum forward to do the work that's in front of us on the many, many issues that, you know, affect the health and well-being of our community. I had the chance today to meet with Mona Smiley to kind of get back into, you know, full speed with the reimagining public safety work, and excited to work closely with her. We're excited to have her co-located in our building. I think there's some great synergy there that, you know, we'll be able to help her and she'll be able to help us. You know, obviously the merger is now in full swing, and that's exciting too. There's a lot of exciting work going on around our new identity, around how we can better provide services amongst all of the programming that we have there, about co-locating services between the two buildings. So there's a lot going on. And then our community partners are facing issues around, you know, dealing with mental health and substance use disorders, and really preparing for, you know, trying to address social determinants of health in our community to help the well-being, health and well-being of everyone. So, you know, as we have this, you know, transition point, I want to thank everyone for their support. The last 2 years have been grueling, but I wouldn't want to have done them in any other community. The way that everyone has responded, the way that we've been supported by the legislature, by other county departments, by our community as a whole, it really made the work worthwhile. And so, you know, I want to offer my thanks for that. And, you know, I'm not going anywhere. Our departments aren't going anywhere. And you're going to start to get tired of hearing us talk about some of those other issues, too, because they need our attention and they need the same urgency that we've applied to COVID as well. So more to come on many of those issues. And as always, you know, we're happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you, Frank. And thank you also to you and your staff, and really to much of the staff of our county. We had people that were from probation that were doing contact tracing. We had planning people. People were all over the place supporting our community and helping with all facets of public health. And that is why we were so strong during this pandemic. And we thank you and we thank your staff. Not enough words to thank you, Frank. Randy Brown.
Thank you. This is my last time to talk to you about COVID, Frank. I figured I'd speak up. As I mentioned before, the county did a great job. As somebody from the outside looking in who wasn't in part of this government, Thomas County did great. What would help me is we looked at COVID when they first came out with what it was going to be, and the mortality rates were extremely scary, and it was such an unknown. And everywhere you went, the next month was an unknown, and a lot was learned. But one of the things that came up quite a bit was ICU beds, ventilators, those kinds of masks, all those things. It'd be helpful for to know where did we end up, like how many beds did we have or not have, how was our ventilators if we needed them, to know more about things like, for example, for quite a while, people didn't even talk about if you had COVID, if you had antibodies, which people knew that you did, but it was never discussed for political reasons, in my opinion, and to get more people to do vaccinations. And the last part of that, so a recap of those kinds of things, knowing that to show the public we're prepared. We've learned, we're good at this, and this is how we're prepared if, God forbid, it happens again. So, and the one piece I think that's really missing is what this did to kids. And if you speak to teachers, principals, it was really horrendous, and we need to focus more on that.
Great. Thank you, Randy. Ann Corman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also, you know, want to say thanks. I won't repeat what you guys said, but yes, thanks to all our departments and everybody, Amy Frank and everybody that pitched in and totally changed what they were doing on a daily basis and worked umpteen hours that, you know, we can never, we could never pay you for, but that you haven't been paid for. And we really appreciate everybody pitching in and doing what needed to be done. I hear in the community all the time that they are so grateful that when the chips were down, that our county just dropped everything and did what they needed to do to help keep everybody safe. So I hear that people feel really grateful, people feel cared about. And I just have 12 questions here for Frank. That was one. I thought there was a two pass there. Just one question for Frank. For masks, where can people get those? I know you're out of the booster or out of the tests, the home tests, but if people, and I'm not hearing much about people's needing masks, but that is something that I just like to let people know when I give updates to my community. So if they needed N95s, how would they go about getting them?
And that's a perfect question, Anne, because that's an Amy question, so thank you for that one.
Oh, you're welcome, Frank.
I knew that was coming, Anne. So the libraries and municipal officials, as well as nonprofits, probably the easiest that's the most up-to-date is contacting 211. I know that our folks have been communicating with them as people have been picking those masks up. So that would be the best place to contact is 211.
Thank you very much.
I have Deb Dawson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Welcome back, Frank. I understand you had a vacation. I hope it was a good one. You sure earned it.
Thank you.
My question is, I've been reading in the news that Pfizer thinks that people should have a fourth shot, and I was wondering where we would advise our residents to go if they're interested in getting that fourth shot.
Yeah, so the first thing that I would offer is that, you know, the CEO of a vaccine manufacturer can say whatever they want. Ultimately, the decision-making about whether or not it will be recommended in New York will go through the federal review process with the FDA and the CDC, and then the New York State Department of Health will have a review before there'd be any recommendation in New York about additional doses. So I think we can expect we're going to hear talk from the manufacturers about differences in their vaccines and what their expectations are. But right now there is no additional dose recommended in New York State. That's not to say that there may not be, but I would encourage those folks that are listening to wait and, wait for guidance from the New York State Department of Health and us here locally before they start seeking out additional boosters, because they won't be able to get them until those approvals are in place. But to answer your question about where, if that were to be the case, we are hoping that the traditional healthcare system and pharmacies will be able to meet that demand when the time comes. But just as we did with boosters in this round, if it turns out that they can't and we have backlogs, certainly we will look to figure out if there's ways that we can help support that.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Frank or Amy? Okay, you're finished. Thank you. And any other comment, Lisa?
That's it for me. Thank you.
Okay. Next, we will move on to our deputy county attorney. And if we could all welcome Holly Mosher. Welcome, Holly.
Thank you. So I don't have a report other than to just introduce myself. I'm in my fourth week now in the position, and I've been enjoying it so far.
That's great. Any questions for Holly? Okay, welcome aboard. You had an easy night. Okay, next, Director of Finance, Rick Snyder.
Good evening, everybody. I have no report tonight either to make it easy for you, but I do have a press release I'd like to put out there because we need some help here in finance. We have posted two positions that are open right now. One has been vacant for quite a while, and that is a financial accounts payable clerk. That title is financial accounts payable clerk, and it's a mid-level position in our finance department, and you can find information for that available on our website, if you'll go to the Tompkins County website. And candidates that are interested or folks who want to apply can do so through our HR department. Our second position that was just posted is the accounting manager position. It's a division head position. It's our director of accounting services is the actual name of the position. And that is because Joanne is leaving us, Joanne Carruthers, as of April 1st. So we have posted this job. So if there are folks out there interested in either of these positions, please check our website and apply today or tonight or over the weekend or soon.
Great. Thank you.
That's it for us.
Thank you, Rick. Any questions for Rick Snyder? Okay, I don't see any. Good luck with filling that position.
Thank you.
And next is resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda. Deb Dawson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to offer or add the resolution ID number 10809, appointment of county administrator and authorizing pay above the assigned grade.
Can I have a seconder, please? Seconded by Veronica Pillar. Any questions or comments about adding that to the agenda? Okay, let's do a roll call.
Rich John?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Pillar?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you. Next, we will move on to the consent agenda, and these are resolutions and appointments to be voted on as a group unless any member of the legislature requests that a resolution or appointment be instead included separately and individually as part of the business of standing or special committees. There is an advisory board appointment, 10740, and that is Simon St. Laurent, member. His term expires December 31st, 2024. For the Planning Development and Environmental Quality Committee, Resolution A, budget reappropriation of grant funds of the 2022 budget for the Business Energy Advisors, new construction, ID 10713. Resolution B, budget adjustment for the 2022 budget for the Cuga Lake Blue Way Trail, ID 10711. Resolution C, budget adjustment for 2022 budget for the Resiliency and Recovery Plan, ID 10710. Resolution D, award of 2022 Arts and Culture Organization Development Grants, ID 10691. Health and Human Services, Resolution E, authorization to accept funds, execute contract and budget adjustment, supplemental COVID-19 funding, Health Department, fiscal year 2022, ID 10708. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Resolution F, award of bid, PIN 3756.53, Etna Lane Bridge Replacement, CR 109, Overfall Creek, BIN 3314180, Town of Dryden, ID 10721. Resolution G, authorization.
Pull.
Okay. We're going to pull Resolution G. Government Operations Committee, Resolution H, extend Town of Covert Shared Service Agreement, ID 10756. Resolution I, acceptance of grants and budget adjustment, Board of Elections 10704. If I can have a mover, please. Moved by Veronica. Seconder? Seconded by Deborah Dawson. And we will do a roll call.
Rich John?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Piller?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you, everyone. Let's move on to the standing and special committees. Let's start with Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, and Ann Corman Chair.
Thanks, Madam Chair. We have not met since our last meeting and our last legislative meeting. We do have a few, three resolutions that I'd like to put to the floor. The first one is authorization to enter in a multi-year lease agreement for the Office of Workforce Development, ID 10747, and I so move that one.
Can I have a seconder, please? Seconded by Randy Brown. And would you like to talk to this resolution, Annie?
Sure. This is for the workforce, Tompkins County Workforce Development Board. They need to move from the Gateway Plaza, where they're sharing space, they're subleasing space from IAED. And it works out well for them to co-locate with them, but that area of the Gateway Plaza is due for renovations, and it's going to be renovated into residences, so they won't be able to go back there. And with IAED is working on a new lease for a new office space, and so we're going to co-locate with them again, and so there's an increase in the amount of rent that we'll need to the tune of $9,600 that we're asking to be paid from the contingency fund for this year.
Thank you, Ann. Any questions for Ann or comments? I see none. Let's vote.
Rich John?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Piller?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you, Kathy. Ann, would you like to go for the second resolution?
Sure. Resolution K, authorizing the use of contingency funds for the Housing Affordability and Supportive Infrastructure Grant Program. And this was something that was started a year or two back. And what we're asking in this resolution is the funds have not been all used up, and we're just asking for it to be moved to this year so that we can expend those funds.
Okay.
It's $15,000.
Thank you. Can I get a seconder, please? Seconded by Amanda Champion. And any questions or comments? Okay, I see none. Let's do a roll call vote.
Rich John?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Piller?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
Okay, one more, Annie.
Okay, thank you. This is Resolution L, and this is for the outstanding payment to New York State Department of Labor for the Office of Employment and Training Ancillary Agreements.
Okay. If I can
move that.
Oops. Can I have a seconder, please? Seconded by Mike Lane.
Okay, and this one has to do with there wasn't the correct amount that we were paying for our lease there, and it was reconfigured from the number of staff people to the square footage, and so anyway, we were in arrears of the actual payment that we were supposed to be making. So that this is to correct that outstanding payment of $95,000.
Thank you, Ann. Are there any questions for Ann? Rich John?
Ann, why were we paying the wrong amount? Was it just overlooked, or was there a reason?
It's a little bit complicated. I'm going to see. Is Lisa Holmes here?
I am here. Yeah, I can speak
okay,
to
it. Okay, if you could help me with explain that.
Sure. It predates a number of us, but I believe it was the as of July of 2018, our previous lease arrangement came to an end with the Department of Labor. This is for the space in Center Ithaca for the Office of Employment and Training. At that time, the Department of Labor wanted to renegotiate a lease calculated the way that they assigned rent based on square footage occupied in the building. So prior to that, we had essentially been underpaying. But under previous director, previous county administrator, there was some question. We were going back and forth with Department of Labor on that, and there was, a lack of timely response. Then the pandemic hit. So we continued to pay our previous rental amount, and now we're just trying to reconcile and clear the books.
Thank you.
Any other questions on this resolution? I see none. Let's vote. Roll call.
Rich John?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Pillar?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you. Anything else, Ann Corman?
No, I don't really have the agenda yet. We don't have it figured out for next meeting, but our next meeting for PDEC will be on March 28th. And I also, I'm not sure if we said it here, but I wanted to congratulate Rosemary Avila as our director of workforce. And she will be there at our next meeting, I believe, is on the schedule to talk about, you know, what's the difference in the different services that are provided through workforce and the Department of Labor. I don't know if Rosemary wanted to correct me on that, if I had that correct.
Good afternoon, everyone. Yes, that is correct. Thank you. We'll be sharing more information about the board, the programs, talking about WIOA, and the difference between the Office of Employment and Training and the Workforce Development Board.
And so I encourage people to come to that meeting and watch the recording, because it's something I'm not always clear on, so I'm hoping it'll help clear up that for me and for other people, so please tune in.
Great. Thank you very much, Anne and Rosemary. Next, we are moving on to Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Deborah Dawson, Chair. Oh, I'm sorry. Amanda Champion.
Yeah, I was just going to ask if we could perhaps take up one of my resolutions in GO, because our Board of Elections commissioners are here waiting.
Absolutely can do that. Sorry, Deb Dawson. We're going to move on to the crown jewel of committees right now. Government Operations, Amanda Champion, Chair.
Thank you very much. Do you want me to give my report, or just let's do this?
Why don't we do the resolution first, and then okay. You can give your report afterwards.
Okay, so we have a resolution to increase the pay rate for election workers and poll workers, ID 10757. I would move that.
Can I have a seconder, please? Deborah Dawson.
And I'm sure that Steve and Tamara could answer any questions that we have, but you know, it is sometimes hard to find folks to fill this position. It's long hours. and we definitely need to raise the hourly amount.
Steve DeWitt or Tamara, would you like to add comment? Or I think Amanda did a pretty good job. Many of us have heard grievances about the long days and the little pay that our election workers, and we know that it's a labor of love, spending their time getting people like us voted. Are there any questions for Amanda or, yes, Randy Brown?
What's the current pay rate?
$12.50 an hour.
Greg Mezzi.
Thanks. And first, thanks to Steve and Tamara. And sorry, I'm in a little awkward position. I have to stand up because I've got a nightstand on top of a dresser in my hotel room. So I'm just trying to make the most of it. So sorry for fidgeting. I think this is really important, and I appreciate them bringing this forward. I would like to offer an amendment to this resolution. And I'll first say, before I offer that amendment, I think it's important as a living wage employer that we set our minimum at a living wage. And I don't think that this resolution does enough. I think our election system, our poll workers are incredibly important to the county, to the nation. So I'd like to move that line 22, 14, I think $14, was it $14 an hour? Be replaced with $15.32 an hour, and line 27 and 29, $12,480, be replaced with $23,463.40. The math was provided by the Board of Elections, Steve and Tamara, which essentially would represent the $2.82 per hour increase for the poll workers.
Great. Thank you, Greg. And checking in with the mover and the seconder, is that friendly?
It is to me.
I don't yes, know. Ma'am.
Oh, okay. Mike is saying that it's not friendly.
Okay. So then we have to vote.
Okay.
Need a second on the motion.
Oh, can I have a second on the motion? Seconded by Randy Brown. And let's vote on the motion.
Wait on it, please.
Absolutely. Mike Lane?
I disagree with Greg. Greg, I understand where you're coming from. You want to have this to be the quote-unquote living wage. I can't disagree with the thing you said about what the poll workers do for us. They do a lot for us. But let's remember, these are not full-time employees. They're employed a few days a year. We've had a request from the commissioners of election to raise that. I think that was valid. I don't think we need to raise it to the living wage. Think of the message that you're sending to other living wage employees. Let's say the folks that maybe work for the contractor at Solid Waste or other places. You're saying that these few people who work a few days a year are worth as much per hour as somebody who has a full-time job working in another place which is supported by Tompkins County. I don't think that's right. And yes, it's nice to say, well, we can give everybody more money, but we need to think about every penny we're spending now. I don't know where we're going to go with this economy. And I don't think that this is an increase that we need this year. Maybe we can talk about it at budget time again, but I think it's the wrong time and the wrong place to do this.
Thank you, Mike. Veronica Piller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I disagree with quite a lot of what you said, Mike. Definitely support making this a living wage. I would support any time we're paying someone making it a living wage. And the idea here is that, like, this is what people's time is worth if you're employing them to do a job for you. And especially if you want this job to be available to you know, anyone who might want to do it, as opposed to those who want to do it and also have some sort of extra financial support or freedom or whatnot. And, you know, Steve and Tamara would know a lot better than me, but if it's hard to find poll workers, then I think we want this to be open to everyone. The idea of a living wage, I think, is that it balances out, like, it's just payment for your time such that you have the minimum available to live somewhat kind of comfortably. So if we were employing someone to sit and stare at a wall, I would want to pay them a living wage. I don't know why we would do that, but I still don't think we should be paying them less than $15.32. So as for what message that sends to other people, I think maybe that's a conversation around we should pay other people more. I wouldn't want to pay the poll workers less to try to, like, make sure they know their work worth less or something. I don't think that's quite what you were saying. And I had another thought that I forgot, so I'll leave it there.
Thank you, Veronica. Randy.
Thank you. I was going to think $15 an hour, but $15.32 is fine. I've spoken to poll workers. It's a 16 and a half hour day. So, and they're not getting overtime for that. I mean, it's a straight pay. They don't get any benefits. So it's a contract, basically, for somebody to do something, and I think it's worth every penny.
Thank you, Randy. Ann Corman?
Randy did say some of what I was going to say instead of Veronica, but I would like to offer an amendment to the amendment, and where you mention a living wage, I would like to put in a comma there, as stated by Tompkins County, the living wage as stated by the Tompkins County's Workers' Center at January 1st. Of that given year.
It doesn't say, point of order, it doesn't say anywhere in here anything about a living wage.
This is to, that's true. It says the figure. So I'd like to figure out how to put this in there, that as we're calculating this amount, unless we want to do this at budget time or some other time, but to make sure that it's set according to the living wage of each year. So I'm open to figuring out how to do that.
Okay. There is a motion on the floor. Would you like to withhold your motion and think about what you'd like to move forward? Is there anyone else that would like to help Annie? Amanda?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to, like, Greg's motion is separate and first, mm-hmm. and then if you want to change wording, we could do that. I think what you're saying, Annie, is that you want the rate to reflect how the rate changes each year or every 3 years or whatever, so it's not going to be $15.32 forever. It would be whatever the living wage is that year. Is that what you're saying?
Right.
So I guess I'm not, like, you could add that in as a separate amendment. I would look to budgeting people to figure out how you would change that each year, but
I think that you would have to add another resolved that said that in the out years, the rate of pay would match the living wage rate as set by CFCU.
AFCU. Alternatives. AFC. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not sure, frankly, that it's necessary to do that piece at this time.
Okay.
So I wouldn't support.
Technically, we have to do Greg's amendment first.
Yep. Let's, Annie, can we hold off on your amendment?
Sure, as long as we can figure this out later, when to make sure that,
okay,
that we're figuring for the out years. So I'll take that one back. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, Greg's amendment is on the floor right now. Are there any other questions or comments? Greg?
Yes, one.
Yeah, again, I just want to respond to something that Mike said, because I don't want my statements to be mischaracterized in any way. I'm not placing any value on any worker or any person or any human, right? I'm placing value on the minimum amount of pay that we're, as an employer, Tompkins County, going to offer someone for an hour of their time. I just think that that's really important distinction to make. It's nuanced. But again, this is the minimum as a living wage employer. Even if it's contract work or a 1099 work or part-time work, whatever the case may be, as a living wage employer, I think we have an obligation and responsibility to those that we engage and ask to provide service and work back to us, to provide that at a rate, at $15.32 an hour. And I like what Annie's amendment does, and I hope at some point we can do that. And it's not just a nice thing to give away money to people. It's something to say we have a hard time recruiting for an incredibly important position within our community, within our government and our democracy. And we should at a minimum reward, or pay, compensate those people for that time that they give back to the county and give back to our community through the work that they do. So I'm not placing value on someone. I'm placing value on something. I'm placing value on the work, the hour of work that they provide, and just setting a floor, just setting a minimum for that.
Thank you, Greg. Next is Henry, and then Deborah.
Yes, I have a question. I mean, Mike's point about these workers being part-time, although they do work great hours during that part-time, is there a distinction between limited-time employees at the county and receiving a living wage or not? I mean, are there other workers who work at the county on a limited basis who don't make living wage, or does our living wage policy cover everybody? Does anyone?
You know what? We have Ruby and we have Lisa here.
Okay.
I'll take a first stab at this, in that if the election workers are only working a limited amount of time, and I believe it's under $800, they're not taken on payroll as county employees. They're paid through accounts payable as contractual employees. I believe that would be the only title of temporary, where there would be a temporary employment arrangement that all of our other temporary employees, I believe, are at the living wage, because I think a year or two ago we did see to that, that our temporary staff in blue collar had lagged behind the living wage, and we moved to increase that at that time.
We did not do it for the contract employees through elections.
No, well, and there's a bit of a distinction, because the temporary employees that come on through the blue collar contract come on as employees. They're paid through payroll, so there is that distinction there.
The thinking is whether paid through payroll, whether paid through a contract.
Accounts pay, yes, as a temporary staff, yes.
But isn't it also the case that we have a county policy that requires anybody who does contract work for us to pay their employees the living wage?
Yes, or state why, if there's an exception, why they are not paying the living wage.
Henry, do you have any other questions?
Nope, just lots to think about. Thanks.
That's right. Thank you. Lee Shurtleff, did I see your hand go up?
You did. And going back to the last question that Deborah asked, was there a provision put into our living wage resolution some time back that if a not-for-profit or other organization that we contract with has an inability or difficulty in paying the living wage, that they can apply to the legislature for assistance, or is that incorporated in the budget? There was some provision in there where we were trying to encourage others to, that weren't necessarily county employees or employing county employees, but yet benefactors of county dollars.
Yes, so, and I know from previous experience that applied in, for instance, there were certain cases of nonprofits where they could not afford to pay the living wage. They did come to the county for assistance, and we helped them I know from experience that FoodNet was one of those nonprofits. However, they're in the child care and elder care arena. Those hourly rates lag behind the living wage, and in order to bring them up to the living wage, a lot of that has to do with state reimbursement, and the state does not pay enough to provide living wages. So in order for the county to bring those contracted workers up to the living wage, we would, in a sense, be subsidizing for the state Medicaid rates. So there are instances where the county is not subsidizing. We don't have the budget to do that.
Okay, any other questions or comments on the amendment before we vote on it?
One more comment, Shauna.
Yeah.
Essentially, it's a 15 or 16-hour day when they go on election day from 5 or 5:30 to 9 or 9:30. At $14, you're looking at about $225. At $15.32, you're looking at $245. It means $20 difference to a poll worker.
Thank you.
In real terms.
We're doing that math, Lee. Deb Dawson?
Yeah, I just want to say I do think that this work is of inestimable value. We can't hold elections without these people. And we talk all the time about free and fair elections being the bedrock of our democracy, and we're quibbling about, you know, a $1.32 an hour. I just don't get it.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? I see none. We're voting on the amendment. And let's do a roll call.
Rich John?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
No.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Pillar?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
We have 12 ayes, 1 no.
Thank you. The amendment passes. And we're back to the resolution with the amendment. Are there any other questions or comments for this resolution? Annie, did you want to bring forth the resolved, or would you like to work on it at a later time?
I would like to ask the staff, because we have election staff that's there at the legislature, if that's okay to wait till later.
Okay, they nodded yes.
That I'm okay with that. Thank you.
Thank you. If there aren't any other questions or comments, let's go ahead and do a roll call vote.
Rich John?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Pillar?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
Okay, that passes. Thank you to our commissioners for attending this evening. We appreciate your work. Amanda, would you like to go ahead and do the other resolution and your report?
Sure, yeah. Okay. The other resolution is... appropriation from contingent fund for consulting services, county administration, ID 10689. And I would move that.
Okay. If I could have a seconder, please. Seconded by Deb Dawson. And would you like to explain this?
Sure. And this is something we've actually seen, I think, twice before last year. With the variety of changes and people leaving and coming in county administration related to the budget and county administration, we need to continue consulting with our former county administrator, Jason Molino, and the budget director, Kevin McGuire. So this is to extend that so there's funding, especially with more upcoming changes in county administration. So hopefully this will be enough this time around, but I guess we will see.
Okay. Thank you, Amanda. Any questions for Amanda? I see none. Let's vote. Roll call.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Pillar?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
Okay, that passes.
We last met on March 3rd. We had a very positive and crisp meeting. We had a really nice chat with Carol Kamen, our county historian, came in to just sort of give us an update of what she's working on, introduce herself to a couple of our new legislators. So it was nice to see her actually in person. We also had Tamara and Steve were there from Board of Elections, and we got some information from them. We had several resolutions, and again, it was just a very nice, crisp, whatever the first Thursday of April is.
Okay, thank you, Amanda. Any questions for Amanda? I see none. Thank you. I see that we have Lance Salisbury, Fernando here, and Lisa Monroe. So why don't we go to the committees that have those resolutions first so that those employees don't have to stay for the rest of the meeting. So let's move to public safety. Rich John, Chair.
Thank you. The Public Safety Committee met this afternoon, and we had a report from Arel Lamoro on the proposed jail construction that's now out to bid. So we could see what work is going to be done at this time and help us in trying to figure out what kind of functionality we would look for in future projects. We also had a discussion about the Less is More Act. This is parole reform. And one of the things that has come out of that is that the proposal is to not hold parole hearings at the jail anymore. I believe the idea was to try to move them into a courtroom setting, but they're talking about doing regional courts, which would add significant amount of cost if we had to transport parolees all over New York State to attend hearings, especially if their hearing wasn't reached and we had to go there more than once. At any rate, we had a good discussion about that, and we'll see where that goes. I do have three resolutions I'd like to put before the legislature. The first is document ID 10762, Budget Adjustment Assigned Council, and I would move it.
Can I have a seconder, please? Seconded by Veronica Pillar.
And this resolution, if I might, is to purchase computer equipment for the assigned council office, and there is New York State grant money that will be applied to that purpose.
Any questions for Rich John? I see none. Let's vote. Roll call.
Rich John?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Piller?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
13 ayes, zero noes.
And then I have resolution ID 10755, authorization for budget adjustment of stop DWI reserves balance to 2022 budget. And I would move it.
A seconder, please. Seconded by Veronica Piller.
And this resolution is to outfit a vehicle specifically for engagement on DWI education in our community, and also to run DWI stops in the community.
Any questions for Rich? Greg Mezzi? And then Ann Coleman.
Just a real quick question. Do you know, is there a percentage of the amount of time the vehicle is used for education versus enforcement? Or do they try to go at a certain rate?
There isn't a percentage, but I would say that the approach in New York State has turned from purely enforcement to both enforcement and public engagement and education, which I think is really important because most people do not know what the legal limits are in terms of actual how much if you drink, you know, to get you to that limit. So I think we haven't really done a very good job on education over the years. So this is a positive development in my mind.
Great. Thank you.
Ann Coleman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to take this opportunity to mention the information that was put out by our County Sheriff's Department regarding the number of incidences in New York State that happened during St. Patrick's Day. And because this is a Thursday, then it kind of rolls into the weekend. So I just wanted to put a shout out to people in the community to for themselves and for other people to remember, please don't drink and drive. Get, you know, have a sober driver or stay home. Thank you.
Thank you, Ann. Any other questions for Rich John? I see none. Let's do a roll call vote.
Rich John?
Yes.
Ann Coleman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Piller?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
13 ayes, zero noes.
And then I have resolution ID 10789, a resolution in support of an increase in assigned council fees, and I would move it.
Can I have a seconder? Seconded by Deborah Dawson.
This resolution is urging New York State legislature to take action to raise assigned council fees, and that New York State would pick up the differential cost. The fees, I believe, have not been raised since 2004. So this is a long overdue adjustment to pay attorneys who represent indigent defendants. This will do a lot of very important work in terms of making sure there is an adequate pool of defense attorneys for those who need them. Happy to answer questions.
Mike Lane.
I've actually heard some local attorneys say to me that they're not going to take assigned counsel anymore because it's simply not worth it for what they're being reimbursed for. I wondered if we might ask Lance Salisbury to talk to us for a minute about how we're doing with our panel and whether we've got enough attorneys to handle the cases.
Sure, Mike. I'm happy to. I discuss this a little bit with public safety. So for the sake of those members, I'll try to be succinct. But we are, it is impacting, the current rates is impacting our ability to maintain our panel size. And it's critically, I think over the last 2 years, we've lost about 8 of our more senior and experienced attorneys. who have frankly moved on oftentimes to institutional providers. You know, many of our attorneys, they have families, they have, you know, like all of us, they have, you know, they need to meet health care needs and everything, and these rates don't cut it. It's also, so it is affecting the size of our panel. We also have a number of members who do retained work, who are members of firms who are cutting back on the number of cases they'll take for us because it's the income flow. You know, a law firm is a small business, and you have to keep that profitable. And if you're giving up, you know, retained work that could be $300 an hour to do assigned counsel work at $60 or $75 an hour, you're imperiling the, you know, the sustainability of your business. So it is having a negative impact. I mean, we've been bleeding for a couple of years, and we've been saying, you know, we can carry on. If there wasn't a rate increase, and we continue to bleed attorneys, we'd probably be in crisis mode by 2024. I mean, in terms of our ability to meet the mandate that we're given, and do it effectively. I mean, you can always come up with a body to throw into court. It's another thing to have an attorney who can effectively represent that parent, you know, who's trying to keep custody of their child, or someone who's facing, you know, incarceration. You may have a lot of difficult legal issues to address. So it is having a serious negative impact. It just, if I could briefly, Mike, to follow up on that, so everyone on the legislature is aware, it's a critical issue for the county as well. Right now there's proposed legislation that would increase the rates and have that cost carried by the state, that differential from the current cost. There's even the Assembly one-house budget, the Senate one-house budget, each have $210 million set aside. The governor's budget, to my knowledge, does not have that money allocated. So I think it's critical in these next couple of weeks, you know, while they're, you know, making the sausage in Albany, that they hear from counties that it's important. And that's particularly so. There's a lawsuit in New York County over the lawsuits seeking a court-mandated increase from the same court that ordered the increase in 2004. And they're actually seeking on April 1st a temporary injunction to order it to go into effect immediately. Unfortunately, that lawsuit, unfortunately from the county's perspective, doesn't mandate the state cover that cost. So if that becomes the driving factor that changes the rates, there's a real risk to the county of us getting stuck with that burden rather than Albany doing its fair share.
Thank you, Lance, and thank you for mentioning that the assigned counsel isn't just for criminal charges. Mm-hmm. It's for a lot of family court work, too.
Thank you. Any questions for Lance or Rich? Lee Shurtleff?
Lance, thanks for your mentioning the state budget situation. That was going to be one of my questions, and time is of the essence if they're going to get that into the budget bill where it belongs. I was particularly interested in the third bullet point of the last resolved, which has to do with the capping of the amount. And I'm putting that in my words, I guess, that seems to be similar to what happens with Medicaid. If the total amount the state puts forward increases or requires, the county we're urging that they be capped at what we're paying today. My question is that the case today, Rich or Lance, or if the amount changes traditionally as it has been, have we been picking up a portion of that increase, or is this something new in the resolution urging them to keep us where we are and not?
This is new. In the past, there's only been one increase in 35 years. That was in 2004, to my knowledge. And that cost was simply transferred to the county. They merely ordered an increase in the rates, set the rates higher, and told, you know, the counties, you know, here you go, you pay it. So this would be new and would, you know, kind of force the state to pay their fair share. It would cap us at our current costs.
Thank you.
Any other questions on this resolution? I see none. Let's do a roll call vote.
Rich John?
Yes.
Ann Corman? Ann Corman? Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Piller?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
And I'd finish my report just by passing on, as I do each meeting, our jail population is at 45 with one board out. Thank you.
Thank you, Rich. Any questions for Rich John, Chair of Public Safety? See none. Thank you. Next, let's go to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Mike Lane, Chair.
Well, we also met today, this morning, and we also listened to Arel Lamaro talk to us about the jail project. As you recall, we have two committees involved here, and we're looking at it from the construction angle, and, of course, Rich's committee is looking at it from the programmatic needs of the jail up there. And I think it's moving along. This is a large project, folks. We heard Arel give us quite a detailed report of the things that need to be done up there. And we're talking millions of dollars. We're talking about things like a brand new generator to run the jail should we have a power outage, and the rest of the public safety building, I should say. We're talking about changes to holding cells, improvements in the kitchens, HVAC systems, other kinds of things. I thought that report was excellent that we had this morning, and I want to thank Arel for doing that. We also talked about how we're going to move forward with the space study. As you know, we took over the duties of the old downtown facilities committee, and we will be having our first meeting devoted to that. We're going to try to keep it, I'll use Amanda's term, crisp, and we're going to try to see what we need to do to make some decisions about some of the issues here. And there's some discussion saying that, well, we don't want to just have endless discussion, and I think that's a good point. We need to I think it was Nathan Shinagawa who used to talk about when he was on the legislature, when you have a difficult problem, the best way to handle it is to break it down into smaller pieces. And I've always remembered that. Nathan was the youngest legislator at that time, but he taught me something. I thought that was a great idea. And I think he got it from the business school at Cornell, by the way. So we'll be doing things like that next month. Randy, have I forgotten anything important?
No, but I'll just add something to that.
Go ahead.
One of the things that was talked about and Lisa brought up as we talked about, you know, future moves or removing buildings or whatever, and Lee brought this up, was IT and where it's housed. And that's a big, big move and complicated, and it's not something you want to do temporarily, right? So I think that's got to be in the forefront, and so that was something that was important that was brought up.
That, of course, is in Building C. Yes, Randy, that's very important. And I think we'll probably be requesting administration and IT to come in and talk to us about that scare us a little bit, because I think it's a scary concept that we have to get our hands around.
Thank you, Mike. Would you like to bring forth your resolutions?
Why, sure.
Okay.
Let's, I don't know if anybody had any questions, but we'll move on to the resolutions. I have resolution Q. Now, wait a minute, we pulled one off. We start with resolution G. I don't know who pulled that, but it's authorization to execute a contract with Barton and LaJudas, DPC, for construction phase services, the Aetna Lane Bridge replacement over Fall Creek and in the town of Dryden, and I so move.
And can I have a seconder? Seconded by Deborah Delson.
Yes, Madam Chair, I will second it, but I was the one who pulled it. And the reason I pulled it, Mike, was because I think there's an error in the resolution. If you look at line 22, it says that the funds would be provided from the Central Chapel Road Bridge capital account. And in fact, it should be provided from the Aetna Lane Bridge capital account.
Well, that would make sense, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would.
That's a friendly correction.
Okay, and then the number in parentheses, the HZ number, should be changed from 0.26 to 0.25.
Okay. Is that okay with you, Lisa?
Yes, it seems friendly to me. I'm just wondering if our finance director can confirm that, or maybe you've already confirmed that with him.
Well, I didn't confirm it with Rick, but Annie and I spoke today, and I know Annie spoke with Jeff Smith, so maybe she'd like to weigh in.
Well, the only change that I would make is you're on resolution R, right?
No. We're back to resolution G, Rick. It's on packet page 25.
In the memo. Line 22.
Yeah, I have the correction here if you want me to read it word for word when it was sent to me from Jeff Smith.
Why don't you go ahead and then we'll ask Rick to comment.
Right, it should be that funding is from the Aetna Lane Bridge Capital Fund. And I'm going to read the letters and numbers for the account just to make sure we have it. HZ53259.51.25.
And it is correct on the memo that's on the back.
Right.
Right. It's the same as on the memo.
Okay.
I'm not sure about the account number, but anyway, that's the correct account number.
Thank you. Rick, did you want to comment?
Yeah, just let me, I think she said HZ5325.
Yes.
It should be HZ5125.
Okay.
I'm looking it up right now just to make sure.
Yeah, we could wait a little bit.
Yeah, it's 5125. The project number has to match the account number, so it should be HC5125.59239.5125.
Thank you for that.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you, Annie and Deborah. And any other questions or comments on this resolution? Anne, do you have more comment?
No, that was it. Thank you.
Okay. Let's do a roll call vote.
Rich John?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Piller?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you.
Resolution Q, amendment of the 2022 Tompkins County budget to reflect appropriation of the 2022 to 2023 budgets for the Ithaca Tompkins County Transportation Council and authorization to implement the amendment. That's ID 10763, and I move that. And Fernando's here if we have questions.
Can I have a seconder, please? Seconded by Lee Shurtleff. And any questions for Mike or Fernando? Deborah?
Yes, thanks, Shauna, and thank you, Mike and Fernando. I just had a question about process. Do we do this every year? Do we amend our budget every year because the budget cycles for ITCTC and the county are not the same?
Amend it every year.
That is correct.
Well, it would be nice if we could all get on the same page. Just a suggestion.
Yes, it's just that our funding comes from the state, and they ask that. We require that we follow the state fiscal year, which is April to March. And, of course, the county's on a calendar fiscal year. So I would love if those two would be the same.
So, Fernando, tell her that the answer is if you can get the state and the federal government to change their fiscal years, which I'm sure she can, this is a piece of cake. We can get it done.
Yeah, I was just curious. Just curious, just asking. But thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's it. That's the explanation.
Any other questions for Fernando or Mike Lane? I see none. Let's do a roll call vote, please.
Rich John?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Piller?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you.
And we have resolution R, a budget adjustment transfer from highway fund balance and amend capital program, the Etna Lane bridge replacement in the town of Dryden. That's ID 10719, and I so move.
Okay, if I can have a seconder. Seconded by Veronica Piller. And just a reminder for everyone, too, this would need 10 votes. Mike, would you like to talk to this resolution?
Well, it's just we've having the amount that we have for the bridge construction is a little more than we had hoped because of the costs went up. And we have to amend the capital program to reflect that. I don't know how else to put it. It's going to cost us more money.
Okay. Any questions for Mike or comments? I see none. Let's do a roll call vote.
Rich John?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Piller?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
That's all I have.
Thank you, Mike. And let's see here. Let's go to Health and Human Services has one resolution. And Vice Chair Veronica Piller.
Thank you. Health and Human Services Committee has not met since our last meeting, but we are going to meet again this coming Monday, March 21st at 3 p.m. Couple highlights. Main highlight is Lisa Monroe is going to be there giving a presentation on home health aides, the state of that in our county. We're also going to have an expert or two on the New York Health Act coming to talk briefly about that because we have a resolution about that also on the agenda. Again, that's next Monday at 3 p.m.
Great. And you have a resolution. Would
yes.
you like to move that?
Sure. This is resolution number P, rescission of resolution number 11 of 2022, appropriation from contingent fund and contract with Human Services Coalition for continued 211 COVID-19 response.
Can I have a seconder, please? Seconded by Randy Brown. And would you like to talk a little bit about this resolution?
Yes. It's quite simple, at least I understand it. We agreed to fund the 211 service continuing because it's extremely valuable, but then some federal funding came through from it, so we can now take ours back and have 211 continue.
That's great. Any questions for Veronica? I see none. Let's do a roll call.
Rich John?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Pillar?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
Okay, that passes.
Madam Chair, this is something that doesn't happen very often. We should take a second to smile.
That's right. Great. Anything else, Veronica?
Nope, that's it.
Very good. Thank you. Next, let's move to Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Deborah Dawson, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was wondering if I should make a motion so that our dual committee, government operations, always goes first.
Yeah.
Let's see. Budget, Capital, and Personnel met last Thursday. We passed numerous resolutions for budget adjustments and authorizations for funding that appeared under other program committees' presentations tonight. So I think I'm going to report on some budget, capital, and personnel-related things that I attended at NYSAC. I went to the Taxation and Finance Standing Committee, of which I'm a member. They passed several resolutions, but I think the most significant one was alluded to by our county administrator, and that was the resolution urging Albany to please stop the sales tax diversion to distressed hospitals. The slogan for this that NYSAC keeps pushing is keep local taxes local. And I want to emphasize that for you all and for anyone who happens to be watching us. Why is that important? Because it's your tax money. It's the tax money that we collect that we use to provide services in our county. To have the state take it away and keep it for itself or send it somewhere else is just not acceptable, nor is it sustainable. So if you have a moment to call your state representatives or call the governor's office particularly and tell her that that's our money and we'd like to keep it here so that we can provide the services that Albany mandates that we provide, that would be very helpful. That said, I also attended a very interesting session on the Great Resignation. And it was a relief to discover that we're not the only county that's trying to grapple with difficulties in finding workers, difficulties in figuring out how much to pay them. The problem is multifaceted, and the presentation was very interesting, and I hope I will have a more detailed presentation at our next BCP meeting. But one thing I think we need to be cognizant of is that it's imperative that in addition to offering a good competitive rate of pay, we need to be figuring out ways to make Tompkins County a more attractive place to work. And different generations of people have very different ideas about what an attractive place to work looks like. So we hopefully will be having some more interesting discussions as we go forward as to how to make ourselves more attractive as an employer. Thanks.
Thank you, Deborah. Any questions for Deborah Dawson? Okay. Next, Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Henry Granison, Chair.
Yes, we've not met since the last meeting. And we meet next Wednesday.
Okay. Any questions for Henry? I don't see any. Thank you. And it's 7:34. Why don't we plan on taking a 6-minute break and coming back at 7:40? Okay. We have some minutes for our previous.
Don't we
want to do resolutions first?
Nope, we're going to do the minutes first.
Okay.
Jim, you're going to want to unmute up there, Jim, on the streaming.
Okay. If I could get a mover for the minutes of March 1st, 2022, please. Moved by Amanda Champion, seconded by Randy Brown. And any questions, comments for those minutes? Okay, let's do a roll call vote.
Rich Jan?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Piller?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
We have 13 ayes, 0 noes.
Okay, and the next thing that we will do is we will be going into executive session for three different matters. First is a financial matter of a particular person. Second is the appointment of a particular person. And the third is contract negotiations.
Madam Chair, I don't need executive session before the resolution if we want to take care of that.
Okay. Is that all right with everyone? We take care of the resolution first. Okay. And let's see here. I just have a little bit to say before we move the resolution. This evening, we are going to vote on a resolution which would name Lisa Holmes as our permanent county administrator. Anyone that's worked with Lisa knows that she's hardworking, knowledgeable, easy to work with, and really great at karaoke. She's comfortable managing staff and has the respect of so many of her colleagues. In fact, I sent an email to county employees this afternoon, and within seconds, I had 10 glowing responses from staff who are excited to see her in this new role. As a county, we should also be proud that we are hiring our first ever female county administrator. It's about time. And Amy Hendricks actually sent me some really cool statistics this afternoon, and I would like to go over those. The percentage of top appointing female identifying government officials has been rising slowly since 2013. At that rate of change, U.S. local government leaders will not reach gender parity until 2048, 27 years from now. Sorry to be a downer, but fewer than one out of three, 29%, local government top appointed officials are women. Local governments with smaller populations are more likely to have women leaders. So that puts things into a little bit of perspective and also describes the struggle that many of us women have whenever we decide to get into government work or run for government roles. I want to thank Lisa for her work as our interim county administrator. She had a very abbreviated training, and right after filling in for an opening in our human resources department, Lisa hopped right into her role as our temporary county administrator. Let's go ahead and bring this resolution to the floor. Deborah Dawson.
Madam Chair, I move resolution number U, ID 10809, appointment of county administrator and authorizing pay above the assigned grade.
Can we do a unanimous second?
Okay. Seconded by Ann Corman.
I was asking, can we do a unanimous second? Oh, is that possible?
I think that's a great idea. All those in favor for a unanimous second? That is everyone. Thank you. And let's see here. Deborah, would you like to add anything?
Absolutely not. I'm just delighted that Lisa changed her mind and decided to take this on.
Okay. Any comments from legislators? Mike Sigler and then Amanda.
No, I just wanted to say, Lisa, I like the fact that we're hiring somebody in your role that has literally come up through the county. I can't think of actually anybody that, I mean, there's obviously other people that could do the job, I guess, but you have shown that you are capable of the job, not, you know, by your running of different departments and just really have risen to the call, as it would be. And I'm so happy to see somebody who had started at the county and has really gone up the ranks and knows now the inside and out of the county so well that this is such a good transition. And was able to take over really pretty seamlessly when Jason decided to leave. So I'm just happy that you're taking the job. So.
I have Amanda, Ann, and Mike.
Yeah, I would just echo that. Lisa, I'm really delighted that you're going to be in this position. And I feel like I've gotten to know you a little bit over the years. And just thank you for your service to the people of this county. And I'm looking forward to some good times ahead.
Thank you, Amanda. Ann Corman and then Mike Lane.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am so thrilled to be able to vote on having Lisa Holmes be our county administrator tonight. It's something that I think, as was said, we should be proud with the county that somebody very talented and dedicated can work their way up through the county, and I can think of nobody better, you know, to do this job. And I know we have more good things ahead for Tompkins County, and just very excited to be able to vote for Lisa. I have the utmost faith in her. So thank you.
Thank you, Ann. Mike Lane.
Lisa's had so many different roles, and she's never let us down. We're proud of her. We're glad you're going to be our administrator.
Any other comments? Okay, let's do a roll call.
Rich John?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Absolutely.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Piller?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Enthusiastic yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
We have 13 ayes, 0 noes.
Lisa, we would like for you to give a speech, but we would also like for it to be in a karaoke singing.
And crisp.
Yes.
We have a tune I could. No, thank you very much. This is humbling, and I appreciate your confidence in me. I'm honored to serve the county in this way, and I've grown my career here, and Tompkins County's been very good to me, and I'm glad I can serve in this way. So thank you very much for this opportunity.
You're truly a success story. Okay, next, let's go to executive session, and we will have, for two different purposes, a financial matter of a particular person and then a contract negotiation. Moved by Deborah, seconded by Amanda. Any questions or comments? Okay, let's do a roll call.
Rich John?
Yes.
Ann Corman? Sorry.
Yes.
Ann. Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Piller?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
Not so enthusiastic this time, Henry.
Nope.
Okay, we're going to take a few minutes to go off air.